Are you ready for this? Results, heroes, losers, poetry, literature, Atherton, light song, the spirit of vaudeville, the spirit of cricket. Is it a bird? Is it a plane? No, it's your pod blast.
The sound of masticating from your corner, Ross.
Oh, rather masticating, that is.
Got a small bowl of olives again.
Oh, I have. That's very good of you.
We've got so much to discuss this week. I'm going to just name countries. England. Yep. India.
Oh.
New Zealand.
Mm.
Sri Lanka.
Yes.
Bangladesh.
Yes.
West Indies.
Oh.
Which harks back to our last episode when we were talking about sports journalism.
Mm.
And we just thought, just strip it right down. India. Maxi Muscle.
Ah, has he been on the Maxi Muscle?
Yeah, well, he hasn't been on enough of it, if you ask me. I'm so angry, Ross. I've only recently unclenched.
What happened when you did?
So angry since yesterday morning about 10 o'clock. We've had to delay the pod blast for 24 to 48 hours, simply for me to calm down.
He goes a very distinctive colour of puce, but it's just subsiding.
I think I wasn't the only person that was disappointed about the result in the England-India game. For those of you who are listening in for the news and use this really as a news resource rather than as a centre of chat.
Yes, go on.
I'm suspecting, by the way, on another topic, Ross, that really your ability to speak is being hampered by your consumption of olives right now.
I know, but I'm really enjoying them. Well, look, hang on. To talk frankly,
you having a cup of tea?
Listen,
now as well?
I'm having a cup of tea. Listen, have just a second.
Can I try a theory on you in the meantime? While you drink, I'll talk.
I shall sup and you shall speak.
It's a little bit like dates I like to go on.
Oh.
You drink, I'll talk.
You're a married man.
You drink, I'll talk.
I'll do the talking.
Well, I've got a theory about England's. Can I say surprising loss to India? Because their record suggests anything different, but I think some of the rage and some of that being expressed by the pundits as well comes from a slight sense of surprise. I certainly felt like England could do well in this series, and I think the scale of their defeat has come as a surprise. I said it last time, the Indian bowlers on paper do not look a match for England's bowlers. They look like magicians now, but it's surprising. And so I was thinking to myself today, what is it that has confounded all of the public and all of the critics on this tour?
What is it?
And I think it's to do with the act of touring itself, which is, if you were to have a image of some scales and you were placing things on the scales, you have all the weight of runs and all of the history and England's victory 4-0 in England and the weakness of the Indian side and the fact that a lot of them are considerably fatter than my six-year-old dad on one side.
Yeah.
What do you put in the balance? The only thing you put in the balance is home advantage.
Well, what does home advantage can't count for in this day and age?
I think home advantage counts for two things.
Okay.
First of all, it's counting for the support you're getting at the grounds, you're comfortable, etc. But everyone knows about that. There is a second thing it stands for, which is the other side of the coin, if
this
you will.
Good. I like this a lot.
And it is the awful experience of touring. And I certainly don't mean touring India. I'd love to tour India.
More
New Zealand.
Yeah. Oh, any of them, really.
Yeah.
Having said that, what
can
are you
gonna imagine 2 to 3 months away in the company of that England team?
I don't. Yeah, we just don't know.
Cook.
Yeah.
Bell. Peterson, Broad. Can you imagine what that's like?
Are you suggesting that someone should go in there, maybe me, as kind of a fungi 12th man, just to bind the group together like I do in all good groups?
You volunteered, Ross.
I would do it.
I think there's definitely room for a court jester. But it's not just that. You go all the way back. I love Botham. He's a legend. And he's sure as hell let us know with his tweets to Broad. Rise above it, Botham. Okay, don't bother. Get involved. Botham, but can you imagine touring with Botham? That is a man with no discernible sense of irony whatsoever.
No.
Month after month of his grinding, aggressive presence in front of you. And then every single time, the only cold crumbs of comfort is when he doesn't perhaps make 50. Which is rare.
You go, good innings, Beefy. He had an average of, didn't he have a batting average of over 60 in India? Actually, maybe on tour in general. I think in India.
Which is strange because his overall batting average
isn't that high.
It's about, what is it, 32, 33?
Yeah, I think so, yes. It's around that mark. But clearly very good on the subcontinent, unlike the rest of our batsmen.
Well, that's right. And I think it's time to get cricket specific.
We're gonna get cricket specific, yeah.
Now, let's talk about England, India, Ross. Let's start with the bowlers. Yeah. Which bowlers do you want to start with, England's or India's?
Well, I want to talk a little bit about Graham Swann. Look, he came back, and I used the cricket look. And he had a fantastic impact straight away.
He really did.
There's something to be said for being the guy, I always think, that goes away. And you come back and I was like, I wonder how Graham's going to be. And then you come and go, guys, everything's fine at home. Let's bowl. Because
we're really glad that his daughter's well.
No, I'm saying, absolutely, I'm really, really glad. Absolutely. But I'm just saying there's a lot of limelight. Then comes on you as the guy, you're coming in late, you're like, yeah, guys, it's me. And it becomes all about you, and he bowled like it was all about him. If only some of the other bowlers had stepped up to the plate in the manner that he did. And
I'm just wondering, now that you've given that theory, whether Ian Bell, in a sort of bizarre and slightly crap copycat situation, has now embarked himself. I mean, Ian Bell, a father today, congratulations to him, to a young boy. Is he about to do the same?
Because I think he was doing the opposite before. He was like, he was halfway out the back door, so he's like, well, really, the spotlight's not really on me now, so I can sort of take it easy for a little bit, can't I?
Well, he flew straight off as soon as he got out. Understandably, you'd have to say, with the birth of his first child.
And because of the embarrassment of both his dismissals.
I didn't see the second one.
No, I didn't see the second one, but he didn't.
Actually, that was embarrassing.
Well, because of the score next to his name.
Yes. Yeah, that's always a giveaway, isn't it?
It's a giveaway.
And by that giveaway, a lot of the England team didn't cover themselves in glory.
Other than Alistair Cook. Now, he's one of the people that people are saying, look, he's as a captain, he scores runs. He's one of those people, he steps up to the plate.
Centuries in his first three games as England captain, albeit the first two against Bangladesh.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, he's a record breaker. And he could have, I could just sense a big 200 or 250.
Didn't do it on the next morning, though, did he?
No.
Against the Seamers.
Against the Seamers, very interesting. I mean, he can settle in for long hauls. He's got amazing powers of concentration. We never really had a prayer on that, you know, coming into those final last 2 days. But you just thought for a second, as I think I texted to you, Al, 4.5 sessions he batted, 6.5, and we were home. And in that sense, he only had to do half of what he'd already done again, and he would have saved the whole match, as bizarre and impossible as saving that match did seem.
We've got a lot of people on Twitter that are sending us very kind emails, messages of support, etc. And also they're sending us some interesting links. And one of the links that I got today was to an article from the Daily Mail Online. Ross, I could see you smiling and laughing. Yes, the Daily Mail Online,
yeah,
Ross.
No,
and it was
good.
The most fascinating article I'd read. And it was mostly fascinating to me because I completely agreed with it and had already thought of it. That was why I found
it. And it was in the Daily Mail.
And it was Daily Mail.
It was reasonable.
Exactly. The voice of reason. The voice of the silent majority.
Yeah.
I think it was Martin something or other. Hyde. I'm not sure. But we'll look it up and we'll footnote this at the end.
Yeah.
Remember,
We'll come back to it.
And what he said was that Swann's dismissal was a rejection of the way Cook had batted, because Swann had 20 minutes to go until lunch on the final day. Albeit it was the final wicket, he was in with Bresnan. Mm. I don't think it was the final wicket, in all seriousness, because he would have still had Anderson to go, but somewhere nearby.
Yeah,
the both of them are perfectly capable of putting on some runs.
Yeah.
England are already 76 ahead, and he tries a reverse sweep and gets bowled.
Mm.
And I completely agree with that. I think for test match after test match, there's some sort of acceptance. It's a strange duality in the England team that they pick these guys because they can bat. And they want to bat deep, Bresnan, Broad, Swann.
Yeah.
And then they allow them to go in and actually bat incredibly aggressively towards the end and make very little impact. And that was happening over and over again against South Africa, where Swann and Broad, people are saying Broad doesn't do well batting on subcontinental pitches. He didn't do overly well over the summer batting in the UK, which we know he can do.
Yeah.
They are going in, we're picking all these batsmen to lengthen the tail, and they're getting free rein.
They're doing what they want.
To do what they like.
It's like giving, the, you know, It's like making Graham Swan RoboCop, putting him at number 9. He just goes out there all guns blazing and he thinks he's invincible because his wicket doesn't matter. I think somehow we've got to find a way of putting the pressure back on those guys.
It's by moving them up the order. To my mind, having Matt Prior at number 7 is an absolute absurdity. He should be at 6. And I don't mean that Patel should be at 7 and switching them. I mean the England team should be set up so that Prior is at 6. They do not need to have Swan at 9. It's absurd, isn't it?
Well, yeah. I mean, it certainly is,
or
when he comes in.
As he was in the last game. 10.
Well, yeah. But the problem is, if he batted like he's capable, it'd be all right. But it seems to be when he's at number 10, he bats like a number 10. It's like he tries to blend in with his surroundings, Graham Swan. Just to get back to your point, are you saying that his reverse sweep, it wasn't just a clumsy shot? It was an act of political defiance.
Exactly. It was a complete... He's trying to usurp Cook's role, and the only way is to bring him down as quickly as possible.
Wow.
Having Swan bat at 10 has been the focus of our criticisms, and it's really a really minute aspect. And we're criticising a player who's done extremely well during the whole
best
game.
Player.
I don't know why.
We wanted to come in from the other angle. The thing that no one was thinking.
No one's thinking drop Swan.
No one's saying that, so we'll say it. What I would say is drop, I'd certainly say Bresnan. I think Bresnan Broad looked pretty naff on that pitch. They're the sort of bowlers that you worry about in India. Not much movement. Well, for them, the India seamers seem to get a little bit of reverse swing. But no movement for Bresnan or Broad. And surely they both can't play. Bresnan looked good in the warm-up games. He was the guy that consistently had great figures and that sort of thing. But
I think you've got
just doesn't.
Angry dropping theory, though. Mm. Which, this is, what's happened is two factors have come together here. Number one, we're not getting the pictures from the test match because the UK newspapers are avoiding them. What that allows them to do is have an opportunity to do elaborate diagrams of players that could potentially be in, players that potentially be out, stats, etc. Yeah. And we're getting these glorious double pages of stats. I don't know whether you've seen them in the Times in particular.
I haven't, actually.
I just look at it and I go, where am I going to begin? This is like flying a sort of, you know, spaceship. This is extraordinary. These wagon wheels and stats is all broken down. They're saying who could be in, who could be out. And it's 1993 fever all over again. Look, Broad didn't play well, and I'm not sure I like the guy, but if England drop Broad, as well as changing over with Bell in the next game, and they do need to pick Panesar, they are a team in crisis that look like a team in crisis. I would be devastated if they drop him.
Yeah, I think it's too many changes. I think Beefy, those of you who haven't seen, he had a bit of a Twitter spat with Broad, where he criticised him a little bit. Broad was probably quite right when he said, how many times did you win in India? Which was none, I believe. And then Broad came back with one of those, fair enough, I thought to him. I do quite like old Stuart Broad. He went for one of those casual, hey man, who's having a spat with anyone? Me no spat. Me love Beefy, man. Me love him.
I thought that was a bit of a humiliating climb down. But like I said, I'm a bit down on Broad.
Cricket's just a crazy place.
I'll tell you what, let's leave it on this.
No, Twitter.
England, India.
Yep.
Cricket is a crazy place. Twitter is a crazy place. Yeah. And India, crazy place.
Yeah! Gonna talk about New Zealand and Sri Lanka.
There is a country with perhaps even greater batting problems against spin than England.
You've got the voice slightly of Mark Nicholas today. Do you know, have you done that on purpose?
Not, but I'm flattered.
There is yes.
Are you talking about the ability to speak very, very quickly, but then... When you're nearing
you can
the
do it.
Point, slow it down.
I do. I like Mark Nicholas. He's got a prestige voice.
He's got right up there, De Bell.
De Bell is.
And, you know, the Holy Trinity, Boycott too. I could listen to that voice for hours.
Boycott's a different kettle of fish. He's not above reproach.
No. And he's not smooth either,
He's not smooth. But the other two are smooth as hell. But, in, you know, Boycott, we've got more on Boycott next week, perhaps, anyway, in a Boycott exclusive that we keep promising. Anyway.
New Zealand, Sri Lanka. New Zealand defeated with ease by the Sri Lankan spinners. They didn't do well in India either. Ashwin ran straight through the New Zealand batting lineup. Is this a function of teams that are brought up on seeming green wickets? Disgust.
Yes.
Good.
Well, it seems to be. The only stats, the stats back it up. I mean, we talked about England being good on paper. We're just not good in actuality. Yeah. And that's an issue.
Whereas New Zealand aren't good really on paper.
On paper either. So they've sidestepped the possible threat of bottling it.
It's less frustrating, isn't it?
Yeah.
I watched the New Zealand rugby team against Scotland a couple of weeks ago, and I understand now that they need... that basically, there's nothing left for the cricket team. Yep. All sporting magic has been sucked towards the rugby team, who are playing the most sublime sport
I've
ever seen.
Well, I was just about to ask that. I mean, I'd love to go to New Zealand. I love them as a nation. But listen to this.
You'll be seeing The Hobbit.
Well, I don't know about that, actually. I was thinking about... Anyway, enough of that. We'll talk about that another day. I was trying to pick my boxing
on
day
your film podcast.
Maybe on my film podcast. And when I thought about it, I thought I might go and see Life of Pi on Boxing Day. Anyway, that's by the by. But why is it that they... And again, I love New Zealand sport, but the cricket team turn up as of sort of baggy-clothed chancers who've turned up on the off day, and it turns out they're pretty good. And the rugby team is this well-oiled android of success. And what the two are just so different.
The discrepancy is incredible. Why don't they just bring one guy out of the rugby setup, the administrative setup, or the coaching setup, and just go, fix them. Fix them. Do
this one's not working.
And also, why doesn't the New Zealand cricket team also steal South Sea Islanders in the way that the New Zealand rugby team does as well?
That's true.
Can you imagine these enormous Tongans smashing sixes everywhere? Yeah. Be a glorious sight.
That's
Ross.
A good point.
Glorious sight.
Jesus. They're quite powerful, aren't they? I do like that about both teams. Jesse Ryder, I mean, some say powerful, some say fat, but he bloody hits the ball out of the park. I do like the New Zealanders. I've said that three times now, but I really do. They're a power team.
Do you like
team.
The Sri Lankans, though?
Oh, God. Do I? I like them very much. Can you give me some stat on what they've been up to?
Absolutely. I can start off with the most successful bowler in the whole thing, which was Herath, who took a fifer in both innings.
The left-arm spinner.
He did extremely well. Talk to me about Herath. Where do you see him in relation to the Pakistani spin attack, to the Indian spin attack? Who's on top? Because Herath, you know, most wickets for a spinner in the last calendar year.
I tell you what, he doesn't have any of the... I don't believe that he has much mystery about him. Certainly not as opposed to... You know, he's sort of the successor to Muralitharan, who had, you know, all the mystery you could possibly want. I mean, when we talk about a mystery bowler, talk about someone with that magic delivery, people aren't sure which way it's going to spin. But I don't think Herath really has that. He probably has a decent couple of variations, but he seems to have done it with consistency to a large extent, hasn't he?
It's absolutely incredible. He took 11 wickets in that game against New Zealand at an economy rate of less than 2.5. And he seems to be, for some reason, unplayable. These are not all lower order wickets either. Mm. Ably supported, may I add, by Randeev, who's also been doing well.
Ladies and gentlemen, introducing Randeev! Talking about Randeev, I quite like that he does the thing where he stops, doesn't it, a bit, as he's about to bowl it.
Yeah.
He goes up and he's a pauser, and that's his main skill. Him and Gale, it's not his main skill, but that's what I remember him for.
I mean, if he had to describe what he did for a living to an alien,
yeah,
he might say, well, basically my main skill is I propel this ball.
Yeah.
But really my trick, the thing that makes me Randeev, maybe he refers to himself in the third person.
What makes Randeev,
exactly. It's,
let Randeev break this down for you.
Just let Randeev be Randeev.
That's just me being Randeev.
Just, it's like, let Bartlett be Bartlett. Let Randeev be Randeev.
Who's Bartlett?
West Wing. Is West Wing reference? West Wing.
For our middle-class listeners.
Let's talk about the last game, and that is West Indies versus Bangladesh.
Yes, well, I want to know about this.
Well, I don't really want to talk about it.
Oh, I'll tell you what I did notice.
West Indies won. Again.
Why don't you want to talk about it?
Well, not because it was a bad game. It seemed like it was a very interesting game. I think really the problem with that whole situation is that Bangladesh are crap, isn't it?
Bangladesh aren't that great. What I liked, though, is that they seemed to... It wasn't just Samuels putting them to the sword. They got Kieran Powell, who doesn't tend to score that many runs when I've seen. And also Ramdin. Did he have another little sign addressed to an old West Indies cricket player like, yeah, Viv, what you like about that? Yeah. Scored more
How
runs,
do you like
yeah?
what I've done against Bangladesh?
They got a really large sign up. You owe me some money, yeah?
Well, you know, Powell got 110 in both innings. 117 and 110. So back-to-back centuries for him. That's really great stuff, isn't it?
Let's not forget 108 for Naeem Islam and an 89 for the quite fantastic Shakib El Hassan.
Yeah, Bangladesh did well to put on 5-5-6 after the West Indies had done 5-2-7. It looked like it was going to become a draw. It looks like it could be a really interesting series. One thing that I found out this week, Ross, did you know that India supported Bangladesh's entry as a full test playing nation, but have never invited Bangladesh to play on the Indian subcontinent? In India.
I didn't know that.
Bangladesh is on the Indian subcontinent.
Yeah, it's in there. Yeah.
They've never invited them.
They don't
them,
need
though.
To be invited.
No.
You don't need to be invited into your own home, so goes the saying. I just want to point out, finally, that Chanderpaul got 200, the crab.
Yeah, that's...
We didn't point that out.
We haven't pointed it out, and it's just an incredible rich fame and form from another guy who is incredibly old.
He is very old. Tell you he's very young, though. The chap who got number three came in against England. I thought, you know, this is one guy we don't know too much about him. Is he going to be good? Is he not? He's ended up with 200 runs and an average of infinity. You know, they've got another star batsman in the ranks, haven't they, India? That is segueing back into England, India, I do realise. But he's one of the things I worry about in this series. The bowling attack might not be great, but the batters are still up there.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, well, good luck to England in the second test. Don't let us down.
Okay, it's time for cricket poetry. It's the segment you've really all been waiting for. So, when looking into the history of cricket poetry, I went straight for Wikipedia. And Wikipedia said, simply, the sport of cricket has inspired much poetry, most of which romanticises the sport. So there's no hard-hitting, satirical poetry about cricket.
It's not a common genre, is it?
It's not a common genre, but I tell you what, there's quite a lot here. Now, I had looked at this a while ago, and the cupboard was fairly bare. And I've come back to it, and my, how the cupboard is full of delights. Many of them, things like this, are satirical. But well, I said there was no satirical poems.
You start with one.
I'm going to start with one. It's not hard hitting, but there's a bit of humour in there. It mimics Tennyson's famous "Break, Break, Break." If you know that poem. Talk along with this. Block, 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 at the foot of thy wicket, O Scotton, and I would that my tongue would utter, my boredom you won't pot on. O nice for the bowler, my boy, that each ball like a barn door you play. O nice for yourself, I suppose, that you stick at the wicket all day. And the clock's slow hand goes on, and still you keep up your sticks, but oh, for the lift of a smiting hand and the sound of a swipe for a six. Block, 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 at the foot of thy wicket, ah, do. But 1 hour of grace or Walter Reed were worth a week of you. Now, I don't really,
understand that.
I don't understand that.
No.
I'm not going to lie to you.
Yeah.
I don't understand why that's good.
Yeah. You've kicked off with a poem that undermines your main argument and makes no sense.
No, it doesn't well, it does a bit, but, you know, I think that really relies, if you knew Tennyson rather than cricket, then you would enjoy that.
If you're a scholar of Tennyson, if you're an academic.
Also, in Laws of 1950, West Indies defeated England, in England for the first time. And there was this popular victory calypso came about.
Oh, good.
It went, cricket, lovely cricket, at Lord's where I saw it. Cricket, lovely cricket, at Lord's where I saw it. Yardley tried his best, but Goddard won the test. They gave the crowd plenty fun. Second test, and Windies won.
Well, that's excellent.
It's good, isn't it? And what I found was, really, when I first looked in cricket poetry, and trying to find where the hubs are, you know, where the strongholds are on the internet, you will find more poems about crickets, the insect, than cricket itself.
Yeah.
Which is a bit of a shame.
It's slightly surprising, isn't it?
Are there any
poems about crickets appearing at cricket?
Not that I can find, but... look,
hole in the market for you.
There's a little bit of a hole in the market for someone, certainly. There is a cricket prize, though, we did find. It's an annual poetry award. I remember reading about this earlier. I think it was the 2011 competition I was reading about, and since there's been a 2012. It said the first five poems that are in the shortlist, the special evening will be held, and they'll be read out by actors. A phone. Is that yours?
Yeah, I'm sorry about that. I mean, I've interrupted you.
Really interrupted.
Your lecture.
Such a flow there. So, you know, what can I do but read out a little bit of the winning poem, I believe, from this year. Now, I thought people have... there's some quite odd writing around it. There's a lot of brash sort of boasting about certain poems and the ability of certain poets. And I thought, this is a blog by Australians. So this is White on Black. And you might notice that it's written by Australians for Australians. The first Australians... Not yet Australians, the first Ashes tour before the Ashes, after the inferno in the old country, from the oldest country, then tall and lean. Creams on Black, Dickie Dick, Sundown and King Cole, up against Archibald, Percival and Algernon. Eddie Gilbert, the fastest of the fast, curved the ball like a boomerang. Wheeled out before royalty, paraded at court. A travesty, cried the Times. Conquered natives of a convict colony, playing at Lords. Lords was for Lords, not cricket. The MCC mob, gaudy blazers, adorned with neckcloths of crimson and gold. Tribal rituals of polite applause, feasts of cucumber sandwiches, disgusting. Then returning heroes, never to leave their state again. Where are the White on Blacks? Gillespie and Simons, the only ones to own up. Banished. Layabouts, stockmen and drovers' boys, destined to be fighters and footballers. Not designed for our noble game.
It's not really appropriate on the radio to take a moment to think about what we've listened to because...
This precious little time in the dead air would really confuse the listener.
Well, it wouldn't really work, would it? It wouldn't really be radio. So let's move on swiftly from poetry to our final topic today. Mm. But let's not leave the world of the arts. Let's stay right there because here we have a book review for the group. And this is a wonderful coffee table book that was presented to me. It's a little embarrassing to say, but for the efforts that I've made on behalf of the cricketing team. Expecting to mention. Great honour. Wonderful. Thank you all.
More off field than on field, aren't they, your efforts? Would that be fair to say? This is a thanks for?
I'll ignore that comment. Britain's lost cricket grounds. The hallowed homes of cricket that will never see another ball bowled by Chris Arnold. A wonderful, huge coffee table book.
Huge.
Which is effectively a book of cricket grounds that don't exist anymore.
Wow.
And as such, I think it's best said by Richard Whitehead of the Times, a wonderful book offering a perfect way to spend a winter hour bathed in the warm glow of nostalgia.
He really sounds like a man that enjoys a Werther's original, man that made that quote.
In reality, Ross, what it really is a very large, glossy book of pictures of
the country.
Shopping centres.
Wow.
And bits of old scrubland. And it's a sort of bizarre book.
It's
really
quite obscure, isn't it?
And you read about the history of teams. I mean, this one is a field in a small suburb of Coventry. It's really just a car park, but they've given over an entire page to this car park. And you can read about all the history of it. No, I jest. It's actually, once you read the text, it's an incredibly rich tapestry of cricket going on there.
Okay.
What can I say? Do I recommend this book? I recommend it if you are to receive it as a gift.
it would be an odd thing to buy for oneself in many ways.
Yes.
Those big books, huge, enormous, full of pictures, you don't really buy them for yourself to sit down and indulge in a deck chair. Do you? I mean, you might with a lovely cup of what ails you. I don't think the general listener would they?
It would be unusual. Not as unusual as this, Rot, which is we are running out of time as ever. No time to read out listeners' letters this week or emails or any of the tweets. So sorry about that. We'll have time next time. Just enough time to say thank you for listening and...
Thanks to Ken Hillman for the wonderful poem White on Black. I know how much that meant to you and how much it meant to us here. So next week maybe we'll review Michael Atherton's character, as we keep meaning to, the man himself. We'll also probably look at the big issues. What are the big issues, Al?
Probably England, India, second test.
You know, race and cricket, that sort of stuff.
Exactly.
That sort of stuff. So all it remains for us to say is thanks for joining us. You can get in touch via Twitter
at cricketpodblast,
or by email
thecricketpodblast@gmail.com.
And we'll look forward to seeing you next week. Ba 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 ba